This is Radio MD COVID-19 Daily, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. Great to be back with you on this Wednesday. It's April 29th. Later in the episode, hear an excerpt from an interview with a Northwestern Medicine doctor on COVID-19 and CPAP patients. We're, of course, keeping an eye on our loved ones during this crisis. But what about the non-human members of our families? Emergencies happen with pets all of the time. So when should you go to a vet during the COVID-19 pandemic? Radio MD's Scott Webb has more.
It's challenging enough to know when we should go to the doctor during COVID-19, but what about our pets? When it comes to urgent care, much like with their owners, you should still seek care immediately for your pets. That said, many vets have changed their hours, and it's best to call ahead. Some vets are offering televisits during this time over the phone or computer, and some are even offering curbside visits. And in light of COVID-19, some vets will prescribe meds without seeing our pets. Reporting for Radio MD News, I'm Scott Webb.
All of the newest drug trials and treatments, and what works and what doesn't, it's a lot to keep up with. So here's Radio MD's Bill Klaproth with a little roundup of the latest trials, test runs, and treatments for COVID-19.
So looking at the big board of treatments and vaccines, there are now 72 registered clinical trials ongoing in the U.S. and abroad. For treatments, we have names such as remdesivir, favipiravir, toxilizumab, and convalescent plasma therapy, made by big-name players such as Gilead, Roche, Eli Lilly, and AstraZeneca. For vaccines, we have major companies such as Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, Sanofi and GlaxoSmithKline, and the Jenner Institute at Oxford University working on vaccines. For the treatments, expect key results in the coming months, with remdesivir showing the most promise. For vaccines, most are saying 2021. However, the Oxford study has jumped ahead of everyone else, as the university's Jenner Institute ran trials on an earlier coronavirus last year, which proved harmless to humans, according to the New York Times. At the trial at Oxford, 6 monkeys have now been given an experimental coronavirus vaccine. None of them caught COVID-19 after heavy exposure, raising hopes for a human vaccine. If human trials, which have just begun, prove to be successful, researchers say we could have an effective vaccine available this fall. For Radio MD News, I'm Bill Klaproth.
Turns out millions of Americans are drinking on the job as they work from home during the COVID-19 outbreak. Between you and me, I'm drinking a whiskey right now. I'm kidding. But according to a survey done by alcohol.org, 1 in 3 Americans say they are more likely to drink while working from home. Broken down by state, the survey discovered that residents of Hawaii are most likely to drink at home during working hours, with 67% agreeing with the statement, while Arkansas are the least likely to, with around 1 in 10 respondents saying they would do so. 1 in 5 Americans did say they stockpiled booze when stay-in-place orders started coming into effect earlier this year. Child life specialists have a vital role with the pediatric hospital setting. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Child Life's programming and support for patients and families has to look quite different. Labanor Children's Hospital Child Life Director Jessica Lyles has led her team to get creative with intervention. She took a few minutes out of her busy day in Memphis to chat with us about how they are adapting. Jessica, what is Child Life programming, and tell us about how it's changed during the pandemic?
So our Child Life team is made up of different individuals with different roles, and the overarching goal for our team is to reduce stress and anxiety and try to make the hospital seem as normal as possible. So within the team, it has looked a little bit different for all of our team members, but a lot of it has involved us trying to be creative with how we make the hospital, with even more restrictions now than normal, feel less scary, less stressful, and as normal as possible for children.
So tell us about some of those creative ways you are, you know, trying to make patients feel comfortable, especially when you're not supposed to be around other people as much. I know you're using walkie-talkies. I've read something about closed-circuit televisions. Just give us some examples of that stuff.
Sure. So one of the things that we do to make the hospital feel as normal as possible is make sure that there are fun things happening. Mm. And that's because that is what's normal for children. Children love to be able to play. It's how they deal with stress. It's how they learn and grow. And so we're trying to continue that even during this season. So we use the word programming for a lot of the fun stuff that happens around the hospital. And all of that looks really different from how it did 6 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And we are fortunate that we have a closed circuit TV station here at the hospital, and we call it Channel 8. Mm-hmm. And so we have moved most of our programming onto Channel 8. Mm. And so we've always, for years, had a daily game show where patients and their families could tune in from their room, play the different game shows, and get a chance to win a prize. So that has continued. And it's a great way for them to interact with other patients and families, interact with our staff, and for a little bit, they get to forget about being a patient in the hospital. Mm-hmm. We've had some patients who love game shows so much that if their medical team comes in or if rehab comes in to do therapy, they'll ask them to come back later when game show is off the air. And so we've been very fortunate that that's something that we've been doing for years and we've been able to continue. But we would typically have a creative arts time. And so within the hospital, there's a room where we could just set out crafts, have kids come and create. And since we're not able to do that, we have craft bags that are put together that someone on our team can take to patients, and then we can broadcast live on Channel 8, one of our activity coordinators putting the craft together. And so it's still a way they engage and do the craft from their room. And it does look a little bit different than being in the same room, the same craft, but it's still providing that fun opportunity. And then we've added in different game shows. One is a surprise game show. And so the people hosting the show don't even know exactly what the show is going to look like until it gets started. We have one person who is over kind of the content on Channel 8, and I think she does most of the planning. And so then that show is really just supposed to be kind of fun and entertaining and not necessarily as engaging as most of our other shows. Mm-hmm. But we have, they'll do story time. Our music therapist is doing a songwriting session, and they have science time. So there's lots of different ways that we're using that closed circuit TV station to try and engage families in activities that can be fun while they're here.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Some other creative things that I've seen from my team is with our child life specialists. So they work specifically on assigned units working directly with patients and families. And like you mentioned, there is that limited contact. And so if we have patients who are on isolation, we might assess, is that a room that we need to go in? Or could we maybe ask the family or the patient some questions by either calling into the room or using walkie-talkies to get to know each other? And then that way we're also preserving that PPE usage that we've heard about in the news, that it's kind of a critical thing. And so I love that one of my team members, rather than just calling into the room, walkie-talkies are so fun, and it's a whimsical way to interact.
Yeah.
And, you know, you automatically feel cooler when you get to use a walkie-talkie to talk to someone.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that has been a great way that she's able to engage with her patients. And so if a medical caregiver is already going into the room to provide care, she can send the walkie-talkie in with them, have that conversation just to assess if there are specific needs or ways that she can support the patient. And then whenever the medical provider leaves the room, then they can bring the walkie-talkie out to be cleaned and then be used with another patient. One of the things that we've seen is within healthcare, there have also been limits on visitors in the rooms. And you can imagine, especially in pediatrics, that's been challenging because siblings aren't able to see each other. Or we recently changed our visitor policy, and so we're now only allowing one consistent caregiver. And so for maybe our families in our neonatal intensive care unit, you have this baby who was newly born, and all of a sudden they're coming to a children's hospital to our NICU. And this may be something that was planned and something they knew would happen, but for most, it's something that they didn't expect. And then one parent is the only person allowed to be here. And so using technology just to help these families connect, or we had a new mom that wasn't able to be here because she herself wasn't well. And so the child life specialist was able to work with that nurse and video call the mom so that she could get to engage with her new baby, even though she couldn't physically be here. And then one of the other things is our child life specialist that's in our pediatric ICU and realized that there was a sibling who was having a hard time coping because they weren't able to be here with the patient. They didn't fully understand all that was going on. They just knew that their parents were not at home as much as normal. And so she created a special sibling bag that had items just to help comfort the sibling, as well as help the sibling feel engaged in the patient's care that the parents were able to take home. Parents said that this made a huge difference in the sibling just feeling connected to the care, even though they weren't able to actually be at the hospital. So this is really kind of forcing us to think outside the box and figure out how we can best meet the needs of our patients and families.
And how are you guys, I mean, staying so creative? How are you keeping your staff just engaged and upbeat during all of this?
That has definitely been something, especially as this continues and as we see that it will continue. Some of the things that we've done, I think one thing has been focusing on not only giving back to our patients and families, but also how can we support the associates throughout the hospital. So a couple of times we've been able to help. Our community has been amazing and phenomenal in providing food to healthcare workers. And so we've been able to help with distributing that through the hospital. And so that's been an easy way, I think, for our staff to feel like they're supporting other people just even by delivering a meal. Something that we've seen through social media is where people are using sidewalk chalk to encourage others. And we had several of our team members who several weeks ago did that throughout our campus. And then we're part of a larger healthcare system. And so they were actually able to help pass that along to some of the other hospitals within our healthcare system and even go to some other site and do sidewalk chalk for those locations. But then we're also really focused on how we're taking care of ourselves because to support everybody else, you have to make sure that you're supporting yourself. Because a lot of the work that we do is kind of rooted in play and working with children, we're trying to make sure we're staying with our roots. And so we've been making time for ourselves just to do things that are fun as a team. It's all virtual through Zoom, but a couple of weeks ago, we took maybe 30 minutes and 10 of that was people just sharing things that they've seen other people do that they're really proud of, or maybe just bragging on themselves. And then we took 15 minutes and we played games and we played Pictionary and Mad Gabs. And it was a lot of fun. There was a lot of laughter and multiple people commented after that about how that was so refreshing. And then today we're hosting our first virtual jam session. So our music therapist is going to lead a jam session and our team members, we're all going to log on throughout the hospital via Zoom and just take a few minutes to just enjoy some music together. And then we've just tried to continue some of our normal things. So our daily huddle, our staff meetings, as things have allowed, those opportunities where we can connect as a team, we've tried to make sure that we're doing that and discussing how we can continue to persevere in the midst of all of this.
Well, Jessica, thank you so much for your time and for sharing those stories with us. It sounds like you have a pretty incredible staff over there at Le Bonheur. Dr. Lisa Wolf is an associate professor of neurology and of medicine in the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care at Northwestern Medicine. And she recently sat down to talk with RadioMD's Melanie Cole about how patients with CPAP may be affected during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Dr. Wolf, I'm so glad to have you join us today in this unprecedented time. Let's start with the risks of COVID-19 for patients with sleep apnea. Have we discovered a link at all?
There's no link between sleep apnea and COVID-19. The infection is one that's droplet mediated, and it's not something that you have to be at risk for in terms of the care or the use of the CPAP machine specifically.
Thank you for that answer. Should patients with sleep apnea who are showing symptoms or who are diagnosed with COVID-19 continue the use of CPAP? Shortness of breath and difficulty breathing have shown to be a symptom. Could CPAP help them breathe? Tell us a little bit about that connection.
So there are two sides to this coin when we talk about the use of CPAP, especially in the home for patients that are COVID-19 positive. We definitely know that positive pressure is beneficial to the lung, especially as we pass through the early stages of COVID. And the use of the heated humidifier together with the pressure is also beneficial because we know that patients start to produce copious amounts of secretions, and that heated humidification really helps to liberate those and help keep the lung open. The positive pressure is beneficial because it's similar to the PEEP we would give had they been on mechanical ventilation. The only downside is that there will be an increased spread of droplet with the use of positive pressure in any non-invasive device. And that brings to the question caregivers, other members in the home, that kind of thing. Because of that, if a patient has COVID-19 and they're on CPAP, we recommend that while they're using their CPAP at night, that they sleep by themselves in the room so that others are not exposed to those droplets, and that the room be cleaned before anyone else would come in. Now, in the morning, when the patient turns their PAP device off, you should wait about an hour or two before going in to clean the room, and anyone who is cleaning the room should use a mask and gloves.
Well, that's great advice. So what should sleep medicine clinicians be advising their patients with COVID-19? Basically what you just said, but is there anything else they should advise their patients on at this time?
I think the most important thing is to know that when the patient transfers from being at home using their PAP device to being in the hospital, you're going to see a variation from hospital to hospital and a variation given where we are in our curve between a flat curve in terms of the population expansion of COVID as we get into exponential increase in the number of patients. Initially, most hospitals will say, we don't want our patients using non-invasive ventilation while they're in the hospital, and that would include a CPAP machine, because of the risk of droplet spread and because of a preference for early intubation. However, in patients who are very stable on their devices and who require them, we encourage patients to be their own advocates and explain that they need to use their equipment for their pre-existing sleep-disordered breathing. Oftentimes, that means a patient will be best off if they come to the hospital bringing their own equipment with them so that the hospital can't say, well, we have a reduction in supplies. As well as we see that significant takeoff in numbers of cases, what we will find is that hospitals and physicians will say, look, we understand that there's droplet spread in association with these devices. However, because of our lack of full mechanical ventilators, we would like to use non-invasive devices to help reduce the need for those mechanical ventilators. And as such, you'll see a significant shift and change in attitude to the use of these devices in hospitalized COVID-positive patients. But again, hospital to hospital, these policies will differ, and day to day they'll differ depending on where we are in the escalation of the crisis.
This was an excerpt from a podcast with Northwestern Medicine. Find out more about Dr. Wolf and all of the doctors at Northwestern at northwestern.edu. This has been Radio MD COVID-19 Daily. Tell us about a healthcare hero near you or highlight a community initiative you're working on by emailing us at covid19daily@radiomd.com. That's covid19daily@radiomd.com. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. I'm hoping to get some fresh air today. We'll catch up with you tomorrow. I'm Caitlin White. Stay home and stay healthy.